nearly 10 years since the Europeans were last here in America, but tonight, in Los Angeles, the World Supercross Finals, the Nipponenso Supercross Special, will present over 60 of America's and Europe's top motocross stars on a track that has been described as the roughest ever by both the Americans and Europeans. You'll see all the top American stars, Bailey, Ward, Lachine, and Hawley, and the top Europeans, Jan Van Dorn, Striebost, and Jobe. They'll all be here tonight.
Los Angeles Coliseum for tonight's
a Pulp MX Network production.
A series of the most exciting action imaginable.
Second fight ball for Ryan Filippone.
Dungy gets by for Sorkin.
Welcome to the Liat Re-Raceables on PulpMX.com. Mathis and Weege revisit the instant classics from yesteryear, spotlighting those historic moto moments that simply never grow old.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Liat Re-Raceables podcast. 2023 is here. Thanks for listening, man. Tell a friend, subscribe. All of that kind of stuff. Really appreciate it. And search it in your favorite podcast feed. And let us know what you think, man. Really appreciate it. Love doing these. They're a lot of fun. Thank you to the folks at Liat, Scott, Guts, Maxis, and Decal Works for coming on board this year. And, man, the guys at Liat have been doing good things for us for a long time for the show. And we really appreciate it. And you'll see them with the Liat gear, with the MCR guys out there. Anthony Rodriguez and Freckle. And more coming on to the Supercrosses near you. Different people ride for different reasons, yet there's a common denominator that binds everyone who puts their body on the line for the sheer enjoyment of it. And this is what Liat offers as a brand. They make protective wear, helmets, goggles, riding gear, knee braces, boots, neck braces, moto and mountain bike stuff. If you go on Liat.com and check their website out, seriously, there's a ton of stuff on there. And if you want to save with the folks at Liat, email us using the contact form on pulpmx.com. And we'll pass on a code to you to save at Liat.com so you can actually listen to the show and save money. Speaking of saving money, it's Jason Wygant. What's up, Weege?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Well, at first it seemed like just kind of a random time to do this race. Now, this race individually stands out as legendary for unintentional comedy purposes, or actually maybe intentional comedy. But then as I watched it back, I realized it is actually more relevant than I thought, because what we have here, what was called the Rodil Cup in 1985, is the World Supercross Finals held in the fall at the Los Angeles Coliseum.
Yes.
Sound familiar?
Yep.
Sounds familiar.
I've heard something about that, right?
I believe that's coming again in 2023.
Yeah. So we probably could have saved it for closer to the fall, but screw it.
It's too funny.
We did a Renthal reaction when the Super Motocross and World Supercross stuff all happened and all that. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, hey, listen, there's been World Supercrosses before in America. And this was one of them, literally, maybe the first. So the Europeans started a bunch of different series to, you know, just get a piece of that Supercross pie. And this one in 1985, I think it was four rounds. I don't know. We'll have Jim Hawley on. And Davey Coombs.
Three, I think, yeah.
Yep. We'll have Jim Hawley and Davey Coombs on here to talk a little bit more about this. Davey was at this race, and Jimmy
racing.
Won. Racing. And,
racing.
And Jimmy won the championship this
yes.
night. So
yes.
Can't really get any better than that. But, yeah, so this was the final round. A bunch of Europeans came to America to race the L.A. Coliseum, and Jim Hawley was in position to win the title. He was battling John Vandenberg. And, yeah, so this wasn't a real AMA Supercross race, so it didn't have all the stars. A lot of guys sat out. Brock Glover's doing the color commentary with Greg Barbakovi, I believe. So, yeah, lots going on here.
Well, it didn't have Glover, because I guess Yamaha didn't participate. Rick Johnson's in it, but a different Yamaha situation, which we'll explain later. But it had Bailey and O'Mara on Team Honda, and it had Wardy and Lachine on Team Kawasaki. That's no joke.
Yep.
So this is odd to me. I don't even know. Is this FIM sanctioned?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So if I have this right, this is a 3-race FIM World Championship in the fall. 2 races in Europe, 1 race in the U.S. And by the way, they also did this in 1999, where it ended with a U.S. GP at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. So again, this has happened many, many times. But the fact that it did bring out, okay, not all the factory riders, I guess not Yamaha, but Suzuki guys were there, Kawi and Honda guys were there. That's no joke.
Yeah, it was. You're right. Yeah, it was a lot of guys for sure. And so RJ was leaving Yamaha to go to Honda, and I guess Yamaha just decided to not support this race. Mm-hmm. And so he was still wanted to ride a Yamaha because his Honda deal hadn't started yet. So he rides a Innovation Sports lower tank YZ250. And Jim Castillo from CTI Braces built him this bike. You know, I'm sure Mitch did the motor and everything else. And yeah, it's real funky, bike. And I guess from talking to people over the years, they're telling me that the gas tank just kept leaking all night long. They were worried about the gas is leaking everywhere.
Well, if you look even on the TV show, you could tell it has the gas tank lower than the carb, like those works Hondas did in 85. They had to run – the Hondas had a fuel pump, didn't they?
Yeah.
To get the fuel to go back up. Because, you know, the gas tank on top of the carb, it just drains down. You don't need a fuel pump. So I'm guessing this bike must have had that because the gas tank comes way low, like the Hondas did.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
And what's also interesting is – and again, if there was media, there would have been a frenzy at this time. We've talked much on this show about the works bikes ending in 85. You know, we had JoJo Keller winning the last moto ever on a works bike in America. We talked about Anaheim 86, the first production bike race. But it looks like Omera is on a production 86 in this race, not the works 85.
Yeah, they were probably just testing or getting ready, right? There's no...
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. There's no...
So that would have been interesting. Like, if we were in the media at that time, and I was... 7 years old, so I was not. But it would have been like, oh God, Omera, Bailey, we're going to see. They're not on the works bikes. What's going to happen?
Yeah, how's it going to go? Right, yeah.
No. Yeah, yeah.
It was, and you know, and so Eric Gabors is there. Dude, he's, you know, one of the best riders in the world, motocross-wise at this point.
Guys.
George Jobet is there. Vandenberg's the up-and-coming kid. Absolutely, some real, real good top Europeans showed up at this race. To try it out and, you know, try Supercross and probably go to Hollywood and Beverly Hills and get a bunch of tourist stuff, too, also along the way.
Oh, I never even thought about that. Yeah, that is probably one of the incentives that they would go and go to this because in all these world Supercross things that have been attempted, this to me seems like the only one. Well, it doesn't have everybody. I guess like Thorpe. Is Malherbe still around at this point?
I think he is, but he's not there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so it didn't have all of them, but Gabors and Jobe and Vandenberg, they're big names. Jobe's already got a couple world titles. You know, it's so funny, right? When we talk about this history of the world Supercross thing, including today, it all hinges on what American Supercross riders are going to race the series. Are they going to race it or not? But what hardly ever gets brought up because they don't race Supercross is no one ever really cares or thinks about if the MXGP guys are going to do it, right? I mean, was that even a thought? When World Supercross launched, was anybody like, oh, I wonder if Hurlings and Febro are going to do it?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, look, the first U.S., their first Monster Cup, they're going to tame the track down.
That's right.
Just a lot like these SMX races. And they're going to tame the track down and invite the Euros. Literally nobody showed. Guys just showed up a couple times. Ferrandis showed up. Ferrandis came over. But Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, to me, looking back at this one does stick out a little bit. And of all these attempts of a fall World Supercross FIM sanctioned thing, it's the only one where it looked like the MXGP riders were kind of showing up and really going for it. And all these other versions was just the American-based guys. So however they got that done, maybe Supercross was still new enough where they didn't think, like, there's no chance, I shouldn't even do this. I don't know, but they did it. They got them.
Yeah, they got them. I can't wait to talk to Jimmy about sort of the specifics of this series and how much he won and all of that stuff, because he was the only guy that, you know, came into this race doing all 3 races. So he was the guy, you know, the top American guys were obviously busy, so they were cherry picking just this race. And I don't even know, Weege, what is Rodil? Why Rodil Cup? What does that mean?
Yeah, well, that's why we're going to bring in both Davey Coombs and Jim Holly to answer some of these questions that you and I still don't understand to this day.
Scott Sports, of course, on board with this podcast. Thank you to the guys at Scott. They've been a part of many iconic moments in the sport, including some of the ones that we've talked about on this show. The only goggle made in the USA, whether it's Jason Anderson, whether it's a Pro Circuit, Caleb Russell, Chad Ween, and Walker Fowler. Champions like these guys choose the quality product and support from Scott. Please check out Scott, the global leader in innovation, technology, and design. Of course, our guy Johnny Knowles at Scott. Very excited about Jason Anderson's chances this year. So, he's Team Anderson. Strongly.
Scott winning 450 races with Anderson last year literally changed our guy Johnny Knowles' life.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yep.
Thanks to the folks at Scott. Thanks to Liat. And also Maxxis Tires, MXSTs, developed by some guy named McGrath. He's done this show a couple times, I think. And Kay Clayson A-Ray putting in the main events last year. Our guy A-Ray, big part of the Maxxis program still in 2023 Supercross. He's back on Blue Crew and running Maxxis's mountain bike tires and light truck tires, trailer tires, that kind of stuff from Maxxis. If you haven't thought about them for a while, well, maybe you should, because Maxxis is around supporting the sport, supporting our pods, and we thank those guys a ton for doing it. So, all right, we didn't set this up perfectly, Weege, because we got a lot of questions, but let's get DC on, Davey Coombs on, because as we said, he raced this thing and he's a bit of a historian of this race. And I want to find out, to not spoil it here, but I want to find out if the fix was in early or if the fix was in late for the heat race gate pick and all of that. So I want to find that out from Davey.
All right.
All right. We got the guy who was there, who raced, that night in L.A. Coliseum, it's Davey Coombs. Davey, before we get too far into this, Weege was bringing up how funny it is that it was the end of a World Supercross Series, and it was at the L.A. Coliseum, and it was sort of the accumulation of an event, kind of like what we're doing here in the SMX in 2023, accumulation at L.A. Coliseum.
Yeah, for sure. That's an irony, but I think that the Super Motocross World Championship is more directed towards the original fusion of motocross and stadium racing, which of course is 1972. However, Mike Goodwin, the promoter of the original 72 LA Super Bowl, was also the promoter of this fiasco, better known as the Rodeo Cup World Supercross Finals, which was November 9th in 1985.
So how are you there? It's a 125 east west, and like your dad and mom are just like, hey, we're racing this thing. Did you have to qualify for it? Get invited? Like, how did it come together for you?
Well, I raced the 125 east coast that year. That was the first year they had the series. Mm-hmm. And this World Supercross final event came along as kind of an afterthought. Supercross, I don't think they even held the first Supercross race in Europe, unless you're thinking about, you know, those old Victory Day races, you know, back in the 50s. They didn't have a real Supercross until Amsterdam, I want to say, in 1981, which is ironically the week before the Motocross of Nations that the Team USA won, you know, the famous first time. Mm-hmm. So it was the double whammy of Supercross being introduced to Europe right when Team USA comes over, and based on what we learned in Supercross, they took over. And it would take a while for the Europeans to catch up, but there were some early proponents over there, like Jackie Vimone, Eric Gabors, George Jobe. They wanted to race the Americans in the stadiums. They did Paris, you know, the Bercy race. They would do the Amsterdam race. They're you know, it's not like now where the top international riders, the top GP riders, they kind of eschew Supercross altogether, you know, because they focus on outdoor motocross. Back then, they were all like, we got to learn Supercross or we're never going to catch the Americans. So they came up finally in 1985 with this three race series. They called it the Rodeo Cup after some, I don't know, FIM bureaucrat or whatever. And, you know, it was very ambitious.
Yeah.
It was very ambitious at first. They were going to do like, seven or eight races, but then it got down to three. And for Goodwin to join in, I got to tell you, it seemed kind of like an afterthought for Mike. because if you look at the event program, the welcome letter is actually all about the upcoming 86 Anaheim Supercross and how that was going to be the reinvention of Supercross in America. And it kind of was mm-hmm. with the Bailey Johnson battle. But so they stuck this race in the fall. The final round was at the LA Coliseum, and they were trying to figure out, like, how could they do a program that was long enough to get everyone there, you know, spectators and whatnot. And they decided to invite the 20 best 125 East Region riders to compete against the 20 best 125 West Region riders. And I happened to be, I think I was 16th at the end of that series or something. But I was there because not a lot of other people wanted to go. So it turned out to be the 10 guys from the East Coast who wanted to drive out there and participate. So
congrats.
Yeah, no, but I was stoked. I got to wear a bib, you know, but Supercross is never really my forte. And my night ended early with a separated shoulder, but it was the most eye-opening event I've ever been to for two reasons. One was Goodwin himself, the promoter. I'd never met Mike before, but my dad had, and mm-hmm. my dad had done a couple Supercrosses, and my mom and dad would come back from these meetings like in Daytona or Atlanta or Anaheim and be like, yeah, Mike Goodwin showed up in a Rolls Royce and he had a long fur coat on and it was, you know, 70 degrees. I mean, he was a gangster of a guy, not in the mafia way, but in a flashy showing the rings mm-hmm. off kind of way. And I was in the first heat race, and actually it wasn't a heat race. There were just three motos for us 125 guys. And I was in the first race, and we're sitting down there on the starting line, and we're waiting, you know, and they're making all these introductions of like Jeff Ward and Johnny O'Mara and David Bailey down on the tabletop jump at the finish line. And then they save the biggest star for last. And they're like, ladies and gentlemen, and, you know, of course, it's Larry Huffman. And he's like, and here he comes, the greatest promoter in the world. And I'm thinking Don King is going to come out, you know. And instead, it's Goodwin, and he's in an off-road buggy, like a desert, you know, truck kind of thing, or at least what passed as that. And he proceeded to kind of do a lap around the track, and we're just sitting there watching this, like, and he gets out of the finish line, climbs down, he's got a fire suit on and everything, and I was like, what the hell? And my dad's like, oh, he's just letting Mickey Thompson know that he's going to go into truck racing too, because they were already at odds with each other, and that was a glimpse of it. And the other thing is, there's no way around it. It was theater of the absurd watching the heat races in the 250 class. And I don't know that you could say it's the blackest eye Supercross ever got, but man, it was close. And to see, you know, the concept was that Goodwin knew that the Americans were going to far, you know, outclass the Europeans, even though it was guys like Vandenberg, Joe Bay, mm-hmm. Pekka Vekkonen, I think Davey Stribos may have been there. So he came up with this concept, and he told the riders about it, you know, weeks in advance, that they were going to do an inverse order on the start, where the first two qualifiers in each of the four heat races went straight to the main event, but they had to line up in the second row. You know, there'd be eight guys in the second row and mm-hmm. I believe 13 guys in the front row, because there's 21 riders altogether. And so the Americans like kind of pushed back on that, because they thought, well, we don't want to, you know, get dirty riding behind those guys for a lap or two. You know, that was their attitude. Like, it's not going to matter. We're going to pass them. It's going to be stupid. So Goodwin sells everyone on the idea, and the first heat race goes off, and Ricky Johnson is there, and he's riding, believe it or not, a privateer Yamaha. He was in limbo between his Yamaha mm-hmm. deal and his Honda deal. So Jim Castillo, who had just started Innovation Sports and, you know, what became CTI knee braces, helped get the bike. And then Ricky, because, you know, he you know, no one cared that much about the race, he decided to wear a pair of Life's a Beach shorts over top of his Fox racing gear.
Yeah, which was awesome, by the way. Awesome. A move. Yeah.
It was, you know, for a kid from the East Coast, I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. Yep. And I was like, man, that guy, that's Ricky Johnson. He just doesn't give a shit.
Well,
and,
for a 12-year-old Steve Mathis in Canada, also very awesome. Yes.
So RJ's in the first heat, and he goes out, and he actually races really hard and ends up winning. And you know, everything is, you know, good to go. But the second moto, I think it was O'Mara, goes out and he just takes off and he's way out front. And then suddenly on the last lap, he just slows down. And when I say slows down, I mean, he just sort of pulls over in the corner in the last sort of S turns in between the whoop section and is just waiting for people to pass him. And you know, so like Joe Bay goes by, or maybe Gabor's, and then Phil Larson goes by, and then he goes again. And it so confuses the flagman. Oh, no, it was Burner that wins the race. It so confuses the flagman that they don't give the checkered flag to the winner. They wait till Johnny comes. And then to make matters worse, they interview Johnny. And I think it's Dave Stanfield's down on the – and he goes, hey, because Johnny – what happened there? I think you got third. And he's like, yeah, I'm sure I got third.
He made sure he got third.
He didn't even try to hide it. So now the die's been cast. And coming up, you've got Jeff Ward in a heat race, and you've got Ronnie Lachine. And so the third one is Lachine, and Lachine doesn't give a shit. And he goes out, and he takes off. But he slows down so much that it's so obvious that what's going on. So Vandenberg, who's the top, you know, European rider in this race, he doesn't want to pass him. But then when he does, he acts like he gets shot from the stands.
Yeah, it's great.
It does look like that.
Yeah, that's
like
great.
He gets a suddenly acute appendicitis or you know, gets hit with a taser. And he rides off the side of the track, and I can't even remember who won. But again,
it was Rick Ryan, I think, or somebody like that. One of these privateers.
But now, you know, now it's like it's obvious what's going on. So the last heat race is Jeff Ward, and mind you, Jeff Ward is the reigning AMA Supercross champion at this time. He's the star of the show, you know, ostensibly, And he goes out and he rides really hard. And he's got David Bailey behind him, and they're battling. And then on the last lap, Wardy goes up into the peristyle and just stops. And he's completely out of sight, and he's just sitting there.
At least Wardy does it right, right?
Yeah, he did it right. He's sitting there with his foot on a hay bale. Well, poor David Bailey doesn't realize what's going on. And David now has the moral high ground because – you know, he also says, oh, my brake went out and, you know, this happened, that happened. But he can't wait long enough for the third place guy to catch him. Because remember, his brakes are out. And so he gets to do an interview and he gets to, like I said, just take the moral high ground. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm bored. He was sitting back there in the hay bales and you know, I you know, and who knows what David was going to do, but the fix was in after O'Mara did it.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of all this, Ricky Johnson is getting madder and madder and madder. And at first he addresses the crowd, you know, in his interview, but then he really decides to give a speech. And they kind of stop the whole proceedings. And it's like, you know, Brock Glover's one pit reporter because he's out with an injury. And then there's David Stanfield. And you got to find it on YouTube. But Ricky's speech where he's just calling everyone out, like, I'm here to race, and these other guys are pussies, and whatever.
We actually have it. Let's listen to
you
it.
You want to hear it? This is so good. This is so good. And remind you, to class it up, he actually put on a blazer that matched the shorts over the jersey.
He did.
He had a Lexington Beach blazer and shorts while he's giving this speech.
The chicken of O'Mara and of Lachine. I really thought they were more professional than that. I didn't think that, you know, when I said I was going to come out here race to win, I'm here to race to win. If you're capable of winning the qualifier, then you should be on the back row. They want to test this rule to see if it's fair. And now, here I am the only one, and I'm riding a privateer bike tonight. So who's a man and who's chicken is the way I look at it.
Did it ever cross your mind to sandbag?
It crossed my mind, but I really thought it wasn't fair to the people, you know, and it isn't fair to the system. They want to try the system out, see how the second row start works in case if they want to use it for a next year format. And now all these guys are just sandbagging. If I was the crowd, I'd get up and walk home.
Okay, now, say the rules don't change, you're on the back row. Could you possibly come from behind with 50,000 people yelling for you?
Put it this way, the guys who sandbag, they better hope I don't get a hold of them.
All right.
That's great from RJ. He regrets to this day when you talked to him about this race is that he should have pulled the cherry Coke hat down further on his head because it's just sitting there. And then he also wants to know why his balls hadn't dropped yet and his voice was so high.
Yeah. You can tell he's kind of breathless. He's kind of having a tizzy fit.
Yeah, for sure.
But remember, this was RJ. At this point, he's got like a 250 outdoor title. He's been riding production Yamahas. The RJ reign has not begun yet. And he really does grow when he gets on the Honda and just becomes, you know, the guy who carries so many titles towards the end. But on this day, he's just mad.
I'm interested, Davey, from somebody who was there. Okay, did the riders, like, obviously you were a kid, but did your dad or you know the fix was in before the race started? Like, did anybody was
no.
Okay, so nobody had, you hadn't heard that, hey, this is what these guys are going to do.
Nobody had said anything about that. And you know what? I was just focused on the 125 class. My biggest challenge was getting through the whoops. they taken a backhoe, and it was like giant Lincoln logs.
Right.
And they were hard to get through. And if you watch the video on YouTube, it's no one skimming the whoops on that night. I mean, it was like everyone was trying to just find one line to knock them down enough. They built tracks a little differently back then, but
so
it was enduro. It looked like endurocross, honestly. Section. It was first gear, 2 miles an hour, even for like Jeff Ward.
Yeah.
You, when did you hurt your shoulder? First Spain.
Second moto.
Okay, so did you hang out, or were you in the hospital?
The problem was there was a big first turn pile up, so the ambulances were gone, and they had one ambulance left, and all I had was a separated shoulder. So my dad's like, hey, I'm going to see how this ends. And then we walked after the main event. We walked to the emergency room, which is about a half mile away. We did not know what part of L.A. we were in.
No.
We thought we were going to the USC Med Center. But instead, we're like walking down Crenshaw Boulevard or Figueroa or something.
Right.
And I'm wearing my motocross boots. I think my dad was mad, and he was just kind of, frustrated with the whole thing.
I think Eddie Warren won. I think you went with your class.
No, see, now that's the real misnomer. And this leads to sort of the answer of a supercross mystery. Rodney Barr.
Oh, Rodney. Okay.
Yeah. Actually won, and Goodwin had unilaterally, instead of calling it an east-west shootout, had decided to call it the 125 Supercross National Championship.
Okay.
So even though Rodney Barr didn't actually win an AMA 125 Supercross, he is in some record book somewhere. It's the first and only 125 national supercross champion. Eddie Warren got second.
It's like Tim Ferry and I, we're summercross champions. We're in a book somewhere as summercross champions.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. There's a bathroom wall in the LA Coliseum that says, that says Timmy Ferry right. won here.
So my next question, okay, so you didn't know the fix was in or whatever. Was the crowd booing? Were they?
Cause yes.
Yeah, you could kind of hear that in the video. They're not happy. Yeah.
And you know, it was unfortunate because I think it overshadowed and really was the death knell for this first try, you know, what we would eventually know as World Supercross, and there'd be many other tries to come. But in the next week's cycle news, of all people, Mike Goodwin kind of gave his mea culpa in an interview, and I actually printed this out. He said, "I don't want our fans to think we're ignoring them. It's just that we tried something new that didn't work." Stadium Motorsports, Mike Goodwin said after the controversial Rodeo Cup Supercross, he says, quote, "We had no inkling that the riders in the heats would be so unprofessional in their conduct."
Oh.
He said, "We realized that parking was also a problem, and the event didn't run like the usual Stadium Motorsports event. So we're considering some alternatives for the fans, something special for our Anaheim event." So he put distance as quickly as he could between that, you know, and it was a fiasco. And it's a shame because that's the thing that a lot of people remember. I remember Jim Hawley being the first World Supercross champion, which is really cool. But the Rodeo Cup was not the greatest finale in the history of Supercross.
And Big Dave made a mental note to not do staggered gate drops or anything else in the future.
and you know, but racers are going to race, and they're going to do anything they can to win. And it goes back to that old adage, it ain't cheating if you don't get caught or whatever. Well, this was kind of cheating in plain sight, but it wasn't cheating. It was using the system to gain an advantage over the one guy who didn't play the game, and that was Ricky Johnson. And I don't think Jimmy Hawley would have either, but I think he crashed in his heat race anyway. So he didn't have to walk that moral plank that RJ passed the limbo test or the litmus test. But man, Wardy, Johnny, and Dogger, they were there to win the main event. Not the heat race.
Yeah, there's a quote here from Ron Lachine. He said, "The whole thing stinks," said Lachine. "Mike Goodwin is boneless." I don't know what that means. Spineless? Spineless?
Boneless?
Boneless? Anyways. And he goes back on his word. "All the riders told him the double start wouldn't work. Myself, Jeff, and I'm sure O'Mara play the rules as far as we can take them. And when he finds out, he changes the rules and screws us up. I would have won and had third pick, blah, 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 blah." So, yeah, Lachine not happy with Goodwin after this race at all. Yeah,
yeah. And Steve, I do remember, and I'll close with this. There was an attempt at the starting gate to change and go to one gate and just do away with all the qualifying stuff. And then O'Mara and Wardy and Dogger were pissed. They were like, that's not what you said. You're going back on. So Goodwin was in a very unenviable position of having tried something that spectacularly and publicly failed, because, you know, those guys are out there to win. They weren't getting bonuses for winning heat races. And RJ was rightfully pissed because he's the one guy that, you know, out of that really elite group of Americans, you know, didn't kind of what's where I'm looking for? He didn't gain the system. He took the high road, and if there were any justice, he'd have won the main event. But that justice would come in 1986.
I can remember again talking about how cool RJ was. I was an RJ fan, and when I saw the Life's a Beach thing and this speech years later, I had the same shorts with the bombs on them. I was all in on Life's a Beach and RJ after this move as a kid. Loved it.
And of course, Life's a Beach would become No Fear.
Right.
And No Fear, you know, the role that they would play in motocross and supercross in the 90s, and certainly, you know, right up to Travis Pastrana and Jeremy McGrath, was outsized. Mm-hmm. But it started with those damn shorts that Ricky put on at the Rodeo Cup. So those are the takeaways. Ricky Johnson was cooler than anyone guessed, and also had a higher pitched voice than anyone knew. and Life's a Beach became No Fear.
Weege, have you talked to RJ about this? You've done so many things with him. Have you ever?
Yeah. One night, Kevin Kelly and I were watching this back over and over at our camper at Loretta's. And then we were doing the Johnson speech all day long at Loretta's. And then RJ was there working for Suzuki at the time. And I don't think he was actually too stoked on that. We just, you know, a song gets stuck in your head. Well, yeah. For us, it was, and then O'Meara, and then Machine. And it just kept getting worse and worse. We talked it out.
Right.
I'm glad he agrees that he sounded like that.
A somewhat dejected Joe Bay said after the race, "I'm upset. When I first signed my contract to come here, they said it'd be a race between Euros and Americans, and they said there would be rules like the best Americans would start in the second row, and we would start in the first row. But I come here, I have good qualifying heat by finishing second, and I find myself sitting on the second gate." Joe Bay goes, "So how is it possible for me, a European, to win here when I race only 5 Supercrosses all year?" So Joe Bay's pissed too. Everybody's angry.
Yeah. Well, you know, should not be pissed and should be relieved. It's John Vandenberg, because I thought he was dead.
Oh yeah. Great point. You thought there was a gunman by the bushes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And had that been the 92 LA Supercross finale, I would have genuinely been scared that he'd been shot.
You know what? And Kehoe in the plot gets thicker. Kehoe says that, in the third qualifier, Goodwin came up to me and some other Americans and offered them $250 to start in the second gate, so I went ahead and agreed with it. So now riders are getting paid by Goodwin to start in the second row.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. It was, sometimes people have really great ideas until they execute them, and then they realize that they probably should have gotten a second opinion.
I can imagine a young Davey Coombs. Oh, my shoulder. Hey, why is RJ wearing shorts over his? Why is Wardy stopped? Like, just so confused.
You know what the worst part of the whole thing was for me, though, on a personal level? I had to drive home after that. Virginia.
Yeah.
with a separated shoulder. My dad stayed out there for meetings.
Your dad stayed there. Okay.
Yeah. So,
that's great stuff. History was made, not the great kind of history, Davey, but you had a front row seat to this thing. So, it's fantastic.
I'm glad that it's on YouTube and that they actually had some kind of TV package. Because if you explain this to anybody, they'd be like, "That didn't happen. That didn't happen." You're like, no, it's like the soccer game where they each team turned around and tried to score goals against themselves because it was a golden goal got you more points in the round of death or whatever it was. And it's like, hey, did you not think that the soccer team would turn around and game the system?
Yeah.
And but that's a totally different sport. I'm sure it happens everywhere. But for us, it was the 1985 Rodeo Cup.
Awesome. Thanks, Davey, for coming on the Lee at Re-Raceables and giving us your point of view. We got Jim Hollywood, the champion, lined up too, so should be great stuff from him as well. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you. See you guys.
Good stuff from Davey Weege, and it's absolutely – check this out on YouTube, everybody. Watch this race on YouTube. It's great.
Yeah, there's nothing that will match that heat race with Lachine and Vandenberg, where Ronnie slows down, then stops, then actually tries to pretend he has a bike problem. He, like, puts his hand up, like, "Oh, my bike died. Oh."
And then Vandenberg,
slumped over the handlebars like he got shot.
Yeah.
And all in the last turn.
Yeah, it's great. And, hey, if you're Phil Larson, you took a heat race win. Sweet. I won a heat race.
I beat Dogger.
Yep. Exactly. Absolutely.
So, yeah, what I could surmise from all these interviews and everything you said from the cycle news and everything, too, it looked like they had told the Euros, "We are going to start you on the front row. We'll then wait a few seconds, then have another gate drop for the Americans, and we'll see if they can catch you." Then they changed it to top two in the heat race goes in the second row. So they were changing the rules from what everyone had been told Just this is for clarification, so everybody knows what we're talking about.
Yeah, and then it looked like Kehoe said, even after that, now he was offered $250 to start in the second gate. You know, after
I don't even. Yeah.
So
I don't even get why you need more incentive. Yeah, I don't even know. All right, just to win the heat, go and try to race.
I don't know. No, this is after the race, after Kehoe finished third. So he had finished third, giving him a spot on the first gate. Goodwin came up and said, "Here's $250 to start in the second gate," and he took the money.
And just moved back?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, who knows, man. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But
and I understand the point. Like, yeah, as kind of the point Davey was making, the concept, you know, originally the concept of, well, we know the Euros aren't going to be as good at Supercross, so we'll just have them have an inverted start. Probably not a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then, okay, that's probably unfair. So let's just, you know, imagine if in the Stu Reed RC days, if they just said top two guys in each heat have to start behind everybody else, you'd been like, dude, this is going to be rad. Stu, RC, and Reed, who are so much better than everybody else, will have to come from 18th every weekend. This is going to be exciting. That's basically what they were trying to try here, but the riders quickly figured out a way around
that. Yeah, they got around that, and in epic fashion at that. You know, when you talk to Bailey about this race, and I have, I've talked to Arthur, I've talked to all these guys about this race because it was amazing, but he doesn't like talking about this race. He said he was kind of ashamed, you know, by his behavior or whatever. He wishes he hadn't had handled it differently over the years. So that's interesting to see, you know. Yeah.
The general, you know, things are just so much less sophisticated back then. I mean, RJ is just grabbing the microphone on the podium and calling the other riders unprofessional. I don't feel like any rider would get into that level of public trash talk with the competition these days. And okay, so not only did Kehoe get $250 from Goodwin, he goes to the media and tells him that. What did Dogger say about Goodwin? Like, he's crap boneless. Talks the promoter.
He's boneless.
He's boneless. He's boneless.
Like a fish. He's boneless.
Or something. I don't want to read into it too much, but I feel like people would be more filtered in their comments these days. But it's 1985, and they're just like, it's probably Kit Palmer, right? Is Kit Palmer writing the story?
You know, Weech, I was literally going back to the story to look at that. As you said that, a great mind think alike. Oh, yeah, Kit Palmer, there we go. Our guy, Kit. Can we get Kit on one of these this year? Let's do it.
Look, we are literally going to be broing down with Kit in the press box at Anaheim 1 in about 3 days.
Yeah.
So it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. We're going to have to get Kit on here. And Guy Cooper. Our vow to you this year, 2023, Guy Cooper and Kit Palmer will make an appearance on this re-raceable.
Yes. This show is about Liat and also Guy Cooper and Kit Palmer. They're our titles.
Thanks to the folks at DecalWorks, by the way, Red Bull KTM, Factory, Rockstar Energy, Husqvarna off-road team. Quality and service there. The guys at DecalWorks can really make anything you dream up, make it a possibility. And PulpMX23 is the code to save with DecalWorks. Thank you to those guys for coming on board with us. Ron and everybody there really doing good things with the folks at DecalWorks. So thank you to those guys for coming on. PulpMX23 is the code to save with that. Maxis, Guts, Scott, and of course Liat as well, Liat.com, the promise of something more. Please check it out, whether it's the FlexLock boots or the Liat goggles or the neck braces that, of course, they've redesigned and first brought into the game way back when. So thank you to those guys. If you need a code to save it, Liat, do that and email us using the contact form and we'll get you a code and you can save some money and all of that. All right, Weege, is it a time to bring gentleman Jim Hollywood Holly on or anything else?
There's many other things I can make fun of, but you want to bring on Jim first and then we can make fun of some more stuff after?
Yeah, we'll do the categories afterwards, right?
And I'm going to make fun of this broadcast as well.
All right, let's do that. Let's talk to Jim Hawley, the World Supercross champion, this night in the Coliseum, and then we'll finish it up. Thanks for listening. Here's Jim Hawley. And now, as promised on the Liat Re-Raceables, the man who was the big winner this night in a bizarre race at the L.A. Coliseum, the World Supercross champion, Jim Hollywood Holly. What's up, Jimmy? How are you, man?
Finished up for the holidays, and interesting. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and Weege, you know, and revisit old races that happened. I don't know. When did that happen? 30 years ago or something? I don't know.
1985. Do you still have the road? Because they have a photo of you holding it up. Do you still have the Rodeo Cup trophy?
Oh, absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. I didn't win many championships, but the ones I won, I definitely keep those. I polish them once in a while and stuff. Yeah, I keep those.
Three-round series. You come into the final one, and we covered the shenanigans and everything else. I guess let me start with this, Jimmy. And Davey earlier said that, as far as he knew, none of the riders talked beforehand about, you know, faking injuries and all of that for the gate pick. I'll ask you, though, did you know what those guys were going to do to start on the back row? Did you have any idea that was going to happen?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, some of the guys said it's not fair. Hey, I want to win, and I don't think I can win from the back row. So, you know, I'm just going to have to lay up a little bit. And
mm-hmm.
They didn't say exactly what they were going to do. But, I mean, Jesus, see, you look at the videos and stuff, and, oh, man, you know, these guys should have got some Academy Awards or the Oscars or something. Good performances. I think one guy got lost up in the peristyle when he went up.
Yeah, yeah. Wardy was up there for 20 minutes hanging out.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. It's something that Mike Goodwin had came up with, you know, like to give the Europeans, a little bit of an advantage, you know, maybe if they can start on the front row. Because, you know, let's face it, they weren't, you know, like us American guys in Supercross. And, you know, so most of them were on the front row. And as a matter of fact, people who watched the video, they probably thought I might have laid up to get on the front row, but I didn't. I was so nervous because this was a big thing for me, you know, to go to Europe and race the rounds over there. And mm-hmm. I was leading it, I don't know how much by, but over John Vandenberg, and he rode Yamaha. So either way, Yamaha was going to win the championship. It was either going to be an American on a Yamaha or a Dutchman on a Yamaha. But so I got in the first heat, and man, I spaced out and I crashed and stuff. Had to come through a semi or something to get into the main event, and that put me onto that front row, which was good. And my focus the whole night was just, I got to stay ahead of John Vandenberg. That's all I got to do. I think I might end up fifth in the main event, but I beat John, and that was my main goal going in. I just got to get into the main event. And I just got to beat John Vandenberg.
Yeah, you were 5 points up going into this round. So
So that's not a cushion. I mean, that's not much. Anything can happen, as you guys well know. You know, and it almost did. I mean, that crash, I stayed there. I mean, I think I looped out in the whoops, and I'm holding the bike up. It's straight up and down. I don't know if you guys have a video, but I'm thinking, you know, if I would have crashed and got hurt and broke my arm, that would have been it. I would have been done, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, what was this world? We were joking about how many different times there's been this world supercross type thing, including now. And then hilariously, the Super Motocross World Championship is coming to the Coliseum at the end of this year. So these things keep happening over and over. How did you first know about this world championship and the three rounds, and where did you go, and how did that all come together?
Well, you know me, Weej. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's something funny because in this past June, I took a little road trip with Philip Christensen. He's a promoter down in Australia. He used to do a lot of racing for and stuff, and he bought a Ranchero. And anyhow, we ended up, Hannah and Hicks had it stored for him so for a year or two. So we went up there to get it. And Bob comes by, and we were going to go, you know, we met him at the airport, and we were going flying, you know. Mm-hmm. And Bob goes, I didn't know a world champion was coming with us today. I go, shit, I had to go over there, Bob, because you were winning all the championships and taking the money in America. So I had to go other places to make my money, you know, and he laughed and stuff. And but, yeah, that's how it was. I mean, I just – you know, I was always back then wanting to make money, you know, and I heard about this thing, and and they said, you know, it's the first time ever, you know, this, that. And I go, well, you know, this might be kind of cool. You know, Laporte won the 250 World Championship. Lackey won it. I go, why not? We need another American to win a World Supercross Championship. So I was all on the bandwagon. Yamaha was on the bandwagon with me. You know, to do it. And that's why I committed to all the rounds. You know, I made sure I was at all the rounds, and the final round was in my backyard, which, you know, at the LA Coliseum, which, you know, that's where it all started back in 72 with Tripes winning the first Super Bowl of motocross, you know. And, it was hectic, that's for sure, you know, to get through it. But once it was all over, I was happy. And I remember Brock didn't ride. He was injured or whatever. He's doing commentary and mm-hmm. stuff. And he did an interview with me, and I had my ankles taped because I rolled them you know, on the jump the week before or 2 weeks before, and they were just killing me, man. And, you know, I at one point I came in after practice. I said, man, you got to take this tape off me. You know, I'm not a football player. I can't move. I can't shift. I can't feel my break. You got me too stiff. You know, I go, I'll live with the pain or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it all ended up working out. And, you know, I still keep in touch with John Vandenberg. He's in Spain right now. He runs a lot of camps over there and stuff. And it's ironic that, you know, I have some Japanese guys over right now, and I still, you know, work with those guys. And, you know, how we ended up doing camps. We just love the sport, and, you know, we want to try to give back to the younger generation.
Do you remember signing up, though, for more than three races? Davey was saying it was going to be a six-round series, but somehow ended up being only three. So where were the other two rounds, and do you remember signing up for more, and then they were canceled?
I think it was Sweden was one of them, if I'm not mistaken, and I think I got second. And I was a little worried because Ronnie Lachine went over there and he won. I'm going, oh, man, I got to go against Ronnie this whole series. But for some reason, he didn't want to ride anymore. So I went, well, all right, that's great. And I think the next one might have been in Spain and maybe Holland. But I never really remember six of them, though.
Okay.
I didn't really sign up for six of them. You know, I just signed up for the ones they had. But there was never any mention. But they did mentioned that the last one would be at the LA Coliseum. So, you know, and you had to compete in all of them to, you know, to be in it. And I did it, you know, which I have no problem traveling to Europe and racing and stuff. You know, I enjoyed that time of my life.
Do you remember RJ's grabbing the mic and being very angry at everybody?
Yeah, that's when he was making this. That was his last ride on with Yamaha.
Yeah.
And Yamaha didn't even give him a bike.
Right.
I think he had to go buy that bike, and Bad Boys, he had the shorts on and everything.
He did.
he grabbed the mic from, I think it was Greg Barbacoby, and or Dave, not Dave Despain.
Larry, it was Larry.
David Stanfield.
Okay.
David Stanfield. And he said, I'm mad at all my competitors. Because Ricky won his, you know, won the heat, and he had to start in the back or whatever. But, you know, I mean, that was good publicity for Ricky. You know, a lot of people were on his side, and the fans and everything were and everything. But, it was just strange on, you know, like, I mean, come on, man. You win a heat and you got to start on the back row. I mean, what's up? Was this Mickey Thompson where you got the streamers hanging off and you win your heat and you got to go back? But I always won my heats there because I made more money coming through the pack because I made, even though I didn't win and the guy who won, he made money, but I ended up making more money if I finished up third or fourth or whatever because I started in 20th position.
Well, it gets even weirder, Jimmy, and I'm sure you don't remember this, but in the Cycle News, Kehoe says that after his heat, where he got third and he was on the front row, after his heat, Mike Goodwin offered him $250 to go in the back row, and he took it and went in the back row. So who knows? God knows, Jimmy, what was going on down there.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, all those scenarios, I was just focused on
one thing.
I remember, and I think I might even send it to you, Steve, but the FIM and I still have the medal also, too. But I think the AMA sent it from the FIM. But I think it was a $12,000 or $15,000 bonus, you know, which was good money back then.
Yeah.
Plus, Yamaha gave me some bonuses, and O'Neill and Scott, Arai, you know, all my sponsors and everything. So it was a very profitable race for me. And, you know, it's unfortunate because the next year, I think I was a factory rider, and they told me I can't go to any of these races. I'm thinking, okay, it's nice to have a salary, and it's nice to be flown, but, man, I'm missing out on a lot of
–
and you got to remember that a lot of that money was cash money, start money to go to the event. You get cash, you win, you get cash, all that. Where Yamaha, you know, you're getting a W-2, and they're taking out taxes or 1099s or whatever it was back then. But, I really enjoyed racing those things. But – yeah, I mean, Goodwin was like that. He always, you know, wanted to have, I mean, I remember, like, Davey Stribos, he came over, I think, Garrett Van Dorn.
Joe Bay was there. Yeah, Joe Bay, Gabors.
Yeah, Gabors. I mean, all these guys, I mean, they were good European riders. I mean, those guys are all world champion guys, you know, that came over. It's just that, you know, they don't have Supercross like we do. And the L.A. Coliseum is really not like a Supercross because they have those long lanes. And I think they had a quad, if I'm not mistaken. It was supposed to be a triple or something, and we ended up quadding it or whatever. But that might have been another race. But I'm just saying, it's unique to go up to the peristyle. You know, you had a little right-hand turn, and you went up the peristyle, and you jumped, you know, and you landed, and then you were outside making a big sweeping left-hander. And then, you know, when you're up there, I mean, you're just looking like it's a plane, you know, like you don't even see the floor. And then all of a sudden you just come rocketing out of there and you jump, you know, like you kind of get that feeling like you're one of those Olympic ski jumper guys.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Now you know what they're going through, you know, they're flying through the air. But that's always iconic. I hope that they bring it back Super Motocross. I hope they use the peristyle, you know, because that's a, you know, iconic thing about the, you know, the L.A. Coliseum.
So, Jimmy, as far as the race goes, and this is a long time ago, but you got fifth. Yeah, Vandenberg gets seventh. Do you remember anything from the main event? Like, obviously, none of the shenanigans mattered to you. And like you said, 5 points up on Vandenberg, this thing was a lot of money. Do you remember the main event? Did you have to pass him? Were you around him? Or was it at this point in 2023,
no,
you don't remember?
I ended up getting a good start, you know, and I was content with that. I just, you know, I made sure my dad, he was my mechanic, you know, for that event. Mm-hmm. And I just said, look, I really don't care what place I'm in. I just want to know where John is. And, you know, he would always say John was in, you know, ninth. Okay, great. All right, well, he got a couple more guys. So he's in seventh. Okay, well, all right, I'm still ahead of him. I'm in fifth, you know, so I was good. But, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty hard track. I mean, you know, especially on the opposite side of the peristyle, that was real tight in there. It was kind of like one line stuff and tight, you know, but, you know, way different than the tracks were, you know, that are today, you know. But, no, it was just as usual. And I'm not 100%. I think I might have even got lapped. I got fifth place, and I think I lapped. Who ended up winning? Wardy?
Wardy won it, yeah, from the front row
Wardy
or whatever.
Won it.
Yeah.
I think I might have got lapped by Wardy, you know. But because I was pretty far back in fifth, you know. But like I said, I was just managing what I had to do.
Yep.
I don't care about Wardy. I think O'Meara ended up getting second, if I'm not mistaken. He might have got second. But, I didn't really care about those guys. You know, those guys are factory guys and making big money, and this is my chance to make big money, and I don't want to blow it by, you know, racing against one of those guys, and I don't need to.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Hey, the crowd thing. Yeah, RJ grabbed the mic. He went crazy. He was yelling at the guys for sandbagging. Do you remember the crowd? Because it did, even on the video, and Davey said he was there. He heard it. The crowd was lapping it up. They loved RJ, and they were booing the sandbagging.
Absolutely. And the crowd at the LA Coliseum was really, I mean, I don't know how many they had there, but I mean, it was a pretty good crowd. I mean, I want to say anywhere from 50 to 60,000 people were there, you know, for this thing. It was because the Coliseum holds, I think, 90,000. So it was good. And I remember after I won the championship, I threw my helmet up into the crowd, you know, and, you know, somebody asked, they said, oh man, I hope you, someone reached up and didn't, you know, break a finger, they could sue you. I go, they ain't going to sue me, you know. You know, look at baseball. You guys happen all the time. They get hurt in baseball catching foul balls or something. But I was just pretty excited to win it, so I chucked my helmet up there, and they really appreciated it, you know. And it's not like you throw a jersey. You throw a jersey into the crowd, this guy might get one sleeve, this guy gets the other one, this guy gets the back of it. That helmet, you're not ripping apart, you know. So,
Oh, but the crowd was good. Like, even though it wasn't an AMA Supercross, it had a crowd.
Oh, no, it had a crowd. Yeah, yeah. It was a good crowd. It was real supportive and everything, and like you said, they did get boisterous at the guys who sandbagged, and they were really happy that Ricky got on the mic and everything, and he didn't sandbag, and they let everybody know.
Did you think at any time of putting some beach shorts over top of your O'Neill pants at any time?
No, because I would think they would, you know, maybe catch on something or something, or maybe when you slid back in the seat, maybe the shorts are going to come down, but the pants stay on. Yeah. No, Ricky was an innovator like that. I mean, he did a lot of great stuff for the sport, and, you know, that ad that he did for Fox when he was naked and just had the boots on, you know, and stuff. Yeah. I mean, he was always – he kind of reminds me of, like, a Jet Lawrence in – today's market. You know, he's a real marketable guy. Ricky and Jed is also like that, you know, coming up with different things, like him and his brother doing a, you know, holding their own press conference. I think it was yesterday or something, you know. So, but Ricky was always a good showman like that, but he also could haul ass, you know. He was also a showman, but he could definitely haul ass. I remember one year in Tokyo, Japan, we went over for the Supercross over there, and Ricky was sick. I mean, he was sicker than a dog, man. And he ended up kicking everybody's ass. Bailey, everybody. He just kicked their all. I mean, he opened up his mouth, he stuck his tongue out and showed me, and you couldn't even see down it. That's how swollen his tonsils were and stuff, you know, and he was hacking up stuff, but hey, when it came to the gate dropping, man, he put all that beside him. And the same with the at the Coliseum, you know. He would put all that aside of, you know, just – but he wanted everybody to know that, hey, man, I'm not going to sandbag, you know.
That's amazing. Just all that drama going on, crowd booing, riders arguing with each other, and then you're trying to make it as calm as possible and just stay out of all that. And it was not a good atmosphere, I would think, to be like, we don't want any drama here.
That was, you know, Jason, that was my main focus, is just, you know, you hear people that win championships or whatever, and you hear them all the time talk about that. Like, you got to block all that stuff out. You know, you just got to block it out and forget about what everybody else is doing. And I have my job, and my job was to finish ahead of John Vandenberg and win this championship.
Do you remember what you did that night?
Can I say on the air?
We would enjoy it, but I don't know.
No, I had a great time. You know, I had a really
okay.
good time. Yeah, I had, those are good times, man. I mean, you know,
okay.
on the Pulp MX show, you've heard some of my stories and stuff.
Yeah, well,
you can imagine after winning that and the money, what I don't think I went to bed until the next morning at 8 in the morning, you know, just an all-nighter.
Attaboy.
And an all-nighter, and I don't even drink.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, I mean, the girls would drink, that's fine, but I didn't drink, yeah.
Okay, so there were girls involved.
Even know if I took a sip of champagne after I won the thing. I popped the cork and all that, but I don't like alcohol, that's for sure. I don't like the taste.
Okay.
If they would have had a milkshake, I'd have drank the whole thing right there.
It says in Cycle News that in the heat race, you broke your front brake cable, by the way. I don't know if you remember that, but that's what it says in the heat race.
In your crash. Because I crashed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think I held it up, and I was almost going to loop it out, but I think before I did that, I ran into something, because back then they didn't have, they had hay bales back then and other things, stakes and stuff, wood stakes. And I think a wood stake ended up getting the front brake cable, or might have broke the lever off. I can't remember exactly what happened. But, they got it together and got it ready for me for the semi. And I don't even know what I did in the semi. I don't even think I won the semi. I might have. Who knows?
Right,
I was just. You know, I don't care if I win. All I care is I got to get into the main event. That's
cool. Pretty cool. Yeah. Good money. World championship. Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty neat night for you, and so memorable for, like, you watch us on YouTube, and, you know, like, Vandenberg acts like he got shot, and Ronnie's looking down at his bike, and Wardy's parked up in the peristyle, and then all of this is your world championship finale, right? So crazy night.
Yeah. And I remember Brock, when he was announcing, he said, and John Vandenberg, he's on my personal bike.
Is that true?
He had to get a little nudge in to let everybody know that was his bike.
Right.
You know, he couldn't be on it,
God.
But John Vandenberg was on it.
Right,
you know?
Right. My last question for Jim Hawley here on the Lee at Re-Raceable is just going off topic off of this race. So we had Doug Dubach on a little while ago talking about the San Jose race, and we flash back to some of his 450 results and his first ever podium at the Coliseum in 88, he got third. He said he got back to his box van after the interviews and after the trophy celebration and champagne, and his doors were locked, and you may or may not have been in there, Jim. Confirm? can you confirm or deny Doug's story?
Yeah, I could have been in there. You never know.
You
know what I
mean? You don't. You never know. You never know.
There's another time at one of the races at the Coliseum that you know, I did pretty good, and I can't remember which race it was, but Tad O'Connell. You remember Tad O'Connell at Yamaha?
No.
Steve, when you were working there?
No.
He was an engineer from Yamaha, but Tad was a good guy. Anyhow, he was there and next to me when I was signing some autographs at my box van, right? And this girl walks up and she had a jacket on, but she didn't have anything on underneath it. No bra, no shirt, no nothing. And she opened it up and she asked me to sign them. And I said, yeah, sure. So I grabbed it, you know, with one hand. So, you know, because they were big, you know. They were, like, sagging. But I wanted to prop them up a little bit.
Sure.
And I signed my name, and I signed it Jimmy. And I normally just sign Jim. I signed Jimmy, and I put Hollywood, and I put Holly, and I put my number, and I put a happy face. And after that, Pat O'Connell asked me, he says, oh, Jimson, how come every time you sign an autograph, just quick, J-I-M, that's it. But you have a opai. Opai means breast in Japanese. But you have a oki opai, big is oki. You have oki opai, and you like to write a book. I go, yeah.
Well, Weech, on that show with Dubok, Weech brought up a great point. Like, why didn't you just use your own van? We couldn't figure that out, and no one knew.
Well, you got to remember that 88. Now, see, I wasn't racing then. I was done with Supercross when Doug won that up at Spartan Stadium in San Jose.
88 Coliseum. I think you were racing 88.
Was it the 88?
Yeah, he said his first podium. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's two things. I was saying the San Jose one because that's when I was working with Koji Okahara. He was the Japanese rider. He was riding. My dad was a mechanic, so I probably didn't want to use the van then. And then if you reverse back to 88, if I was racing at the Coliseum, my dad was there, so and maybe my mom could have been there or something.
Okay.
I couldn't use my van, so I got something else, you know?
Yeah, so, good point. Good point.
You know?
Good point.
So, I don't know, man. Leave mom and dad alone.
There's been a number of those times.
Dubok gets back to his van after his first ever podium. The doors are shut.
Yeah.
Great. I was busy, probably.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be disturbed.
Nope. All right. Anything else for Jimmy Weege?
Somebody says that if someone listening to this, you know, if they're a book writer, a publicist or something, somebody says I ought to do a memoir on and make a book, you know. And I said, yeah, maybe I should. Now I'm retired, so I don't really care what I say. You know, I don't have.
That's up to you. How public you want these stories to be? I know you and your best friend, Chris Kiefer. You put a lot of it out there, so.
That was I still got people from Guatemala. They think I'm doctor. I'm not a doctor, man. They call me Dr. Holly, and I said, I'm not a doctor, man. But
we had
good times, you know. Those, but you got to remember that I got grandkids now, so if I meant a book, then you know, I'm in trouble, man. Grandpa, he was a crazy guy, you know. They already know I'm crazy, but they don't know how crazy.
No, it's rated R. These stories are rated R.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I got everything I needed for the interview. We even learned the Japanese translation for the word breast. So we got more than we even bargained for.
Opai. I don't understand that. Like, is it a pie? Like, opai. Like, you know, I would spell O and then P-I-E, you know, opai, but I don't know how it's, that's phonetically how I'd spell it, but yeah. I've had a lot of opai in my career, let's put it that way.
And the full name is Gentleman James Hollywood Holly, number 12.
Yep. That's
Yamaha.
That's the name, right. O'Neill and Arai and Scott, all of that, right.
I did both sides too. I think I put Holly on the boob. I put Jimmy on one boob and Holly on the other boob.
Well, listen, that's what she wanted. It sounded like so. Like we said, you still have this trophy, this Rodeo Cup World Champion.
Absolutely,
nice.
Yeah, right. Still got the trophy and the medal because you know when you win an FIM event, they give you a medal also. They put around your neck, you know, and so I still have that in the case.
Awesome, cool.
Yeah.
And of course you have the pound of gold from Montreal Supercross still when you managed to beat
2 pounds
of gold.
Let's get that correct, Steve. I know you Ross have a thing going, but 2 pounds. I won it 2 years.
Oh, that's somehow you were lucky enough to beat Rollerball twice. I don't know how, but somehow you did.
I still have it. Yep. You know, somebody showed me one of the races. I passed Ross on the outside, and everyone goes, normally when you go into somebody to pass him, you're on the inside and you bump him out. But I was on the outside and I bumped Ross going out in the corner. I said, I didn't mean to do that. I was crashing. Luckily, Ross was there or I would have been down. You know?
Right.
But, hey, I am going to do you a favor and I'm going to let everybody know so they can get ready for it. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm going to get Rollerball down here and we're going to surprise you one of these nights when you're doing the Hope MX, and we're just going to walk into the studio.
I mean, it couldn't get any better. That would be it. Yeah. That'd be the last show. I'd just end it right there because it couldn't get any better. It just couldn't.
That we'll save that for maybe the 1,000th episode.
There we go.
We did the 500 with RC and McGrath and stuff, so maybe we'll do the 1,000th episode or something.
And at some point, we'll change it into an After Dark episode.
Oh, that would even be better. I got some stories about the Rollerball, man.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for jumping on the Liat Re-Raceables. Really appreciate it. Congratulations on the World Championship 1985. Always nice to talk to you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, always a pleasure to talk to both of you guys, and we'll see you at Anaheim 1.
All right, buddy. See ya.
All right, see you guys. Take it easy.
Good stuff from Uncle Jim Weej, an absolute treasure. I don't know between myself, you, and Daniel Blair who likes Uncle Jim the most, but I think he's up for all three of us. He is one of our favorite people.
Yeah, and he's bailed us out many times. We've mentioned this on the show before, but you had to announce the Montreal. Is that Montreal Supercross with him?
Montreal, yeah.
One of the many, and you're like, I've never actually done live race announcing before, and I'm like, don't worry. Just hand a ball to Jim.
Yep.
And I'll get you all the yards you need.
And it was fantastic advice because we even had technical issues going on and I threw it to Jim and fantastic. Yep. The man's a treasure.
Now, what I like about our interview there is he was pumped on the title. He told us a little bit about the race, but the girl stories at the end, that's when Jim really started to roll.
It's when he shines. It's when he shines. It's great. Yeah, he's fantastic. Thanks to Jim Hawley and thanks to Davey for coming on and talking about this Rodale Cup race. We got the Liat Re-Raceable categories coming up. Thank you again to Guts Racing. Pulp 2023 is the code to save with Guts. Great seat covers. A lot of teams in the pits use it, and they can customize your own seat cover at gutsracing.com. You can get foam for vintage bikes, foam for newer bikes, and, again, custom colors, grips, traction or no traction on it, different colors. If you need anything to do with seats, Guts Racing has you covered. Thank you to those guys, Maxis, Decal Works, and, of course, the Scott Goggles guys, and Liat as well. Weej, a couple things. I've watched this race a bunch. I only kind of skipped through it to get ready for this podcast. You did a little more of a deep dive into the broadcast on YouTube, and you have some thoughts.
Well, it's a hilarious thing. We bring this up every time we do the show. You've watched most of these races at some point in your life, but when you watch them back again, you still see stuff you don't remember. So I, of course, remember RJ in the shorts and the epic RJ interview and the high-pitched voice and the acting with the sandbagging of the gate picks. But when I went back and watched it in its entirety, I did not also realize that the broadcast was a complete trash heap. It was so poorly done that they had to go back and add another announcer who was not intended to be the announcer. So it appears the show was supposed to be Brock. And Brock, as we said, Brock Glover wasn't racing because Yamaha wasn't racing. And Rod Eschenberg. So at the beginning, Glover's down on the track saying, I'll be down on the racetrack talking to the riders, and I'll also be calling the action with Rod Eschenberg. But Eschenberg appears unable to speak. He barely talks. It sounds like he's just subsisting on unfiltered Marlboro Reds. He's producing just coughing sounds for the most part. Doesn't know any of the riders. Doesn't know what's going on. Brock's trying to bail him out.
It sounds like he's eating glass. It sounds like he's chewing on glass.
Yes, his voice. He's got a diamond voice, not a velvet. And so instead, it's like after the fact, they went in and added Greg Barbakovi, who did a lot of these things back in the days. Brock does his stand-up, and he's like, let's send it back up to Rod in the booth. Hi, this is Greg Barbakovi. I'll also be helping on the broadcast. So this Greg Barbakovi has to keep jumping in like to record over the dude with Brock who would not speak or couldn't speak. So the guy would pretend that Brock was talking to him, but he really wasn't. And then all of a sudden, David Stanfield, who wasn't even mentioned at the beginning, is just there doing all the interviews. some on the podium, some just for TV. The credits at the end don't even mention Greg Barbakovi, even though he did most of the heavy lifting. But I'm also wondering, Steve, if they had to go back and re-announce it also because they probably, recording it live, didn't expect this complete shit show to transpire.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. That's probably a good point.
Like, I mean, I cannot. Dogger pretending his bike stalls, followed by Vandenberg pretending he got shot, is just, there's never been a moment like that in Supercross.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal. Imagine if it happened today. Like, imagine a review show, you know?
Acting.
Yeah. Yeah. We just, I mean, Marv pulled over for Dungeon about melted the internet down and just simply went wide in a corner, you know?
Yes, there are fans. Some fan is dropping a YouTube comment hating KTM, Marv, Dunge, and DeCoster right now.
Right.
Yeah, right. Over losing one position in a race.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
Yeah, and Brock doing the – Brock's good. Brock's on to the shenanigans right away. You know, he is on to – like, he's been, these are all his buddies, so he's probably got word of what's going on, and Brock is on to it right away. So I asked Billy Frank about this race because I text with him here and there. And Billy won the second moto of the 125s. And he said, I won the second moto with Chavez as my mechanic, the Bradshaw's old mechanic. He goes, the whoops weren't huge size-wise, but they were like square-edge trenches and terrible. And he goes, that was why one night as a full factory dude, it was awesome. I tested for weeks prior at De Anza with the Supercross team. I believe it was Yamaha's exclusive Supercross track. I think Brock and maybe Leesk were there as well. Hell, I don't remember exactly. But that's Billy Frank's memories of this race, that he won a second moto in.
So. Yeah. Stanfield interviews and says, you're rookie of the year, and then you won this race. Did you feel you got lucky because some other guys crashed? And then he explained how he won rookie of the year, not how he won the race. And then Stanfield was like, but also, did you think you got lucky in this race? Because I guess two other guys crashed or something like that.
Yeah. Bader Monet and Eddie Warren crashed.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that this is literally the first year for 125s in Supercross. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Like, what? And, you know, the reason that's called the Dave Coombs East-West Shootout is because it was Davey's dad there, Big Dave, who we mentioned here, who came up with this concept of having a support class in Supercross. But what I don't understand, why did it take 10 years for someone to think of, hey, you know what would be good? You know, we have like 125 nationals and like they sell 125s and people race 125s. Could they race Supercross?
And then never mind that. It took another 10 years to be like, hey, maybe we should put the East and West together. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, but it was on and off. I think they had it here and there. Not just this, but
I thought they had the first one in like 91. No.
I mean, even if it was, that's not that far. Okay. I mean, it's only 6 years after this. But yeah, I guess that'd be
six years of racing to be like, we should have a showdown with these guys.
I thought they had it in like 89 and 90, and it was the typical nobody cared.
Oh, you
dudes
know
would
what?
Dunk each other, guys faked injuries, right, guys throw, raced 250s.
Throw one on a Cowie, an East-West. You're right. My bad.
Yeah. There was one year where I think they said 10 grand was on the line, and that was probably a lot. Considering how much money those 125 guys are making.
Yeah, so,
my point just being the idea that – and we hear tons of these stories. You turn pro at 16, and then you just go race Supercross in the premier class.
Yeah.
And by the way, nobody had Supercross tracks back then to practice on.
No.
And I'm just like, this is the best we could do. To 1974 to 1984, just that's the best we can do.
I think your beloved quads were a big part of Supercross for a while. If you want to talk about filling a program up, you know?
Halftime.
And we used to have everyone would do four heats, and then everyone would have to do four semis, you know, for a while.
You'd do a semi still?
Yes, you would still race twice to get to the main because you would have to qualify for the semi. So you would see David Bailey for his heat, for his semi, and for the main, you know? So they seem to, like, not really need the space in a program in a night show at some point. I don't know. Maybe not. Who knows? But
wow. Okay, so you raced twice for absolutely no reason except gate pick.
Yeah, and you had to – but this is what happened to Wardy. Well, no, not in 86 because he didn't make the semi because they took so many heats. You had to make it through the heat to make the semi even still no matter how you did. So it kind of like eliminated even more guys.
Yes, yes. If you didn't finish the heat, you didn't even get to race the semi, yeah, no matter
like,
what.
Like four heats, two semis, right?
And yeah.
Something like that, or three, whatever.
Yeah. It was a true elimination format, but
sure.
Come on.
All right. Lee at re-raceable categories. Let's do it. Thanks again. Scott Goggles, Guts, Seats, Maxis, Decal Works, Liat, of course. Liat re-racing category. Some of these are really, really easy this week. I'm going to let you go first, Weege, on all of these because I don't want to steal your thunder. But when looking at this, there's just no-brainers at every single one. All right. Who really?
Yeah, there actually is. First category is one.
Okay. Who really won the race?
Rick Johnson. Rick Johnson really won. Wardy won the race, and Holly won the title, but Holly even told us he didn't even care about winning the race. RJ basically made everyone who finished ahead of him look like they cheated to win. So it's a win for RJ. RJ is the most memorable part of this race.
And I would agree. And they and the crowd loved it. The crowd ate it up. He got, he had the speech, all of it. Yeah. I mean, you could say Jimmy. There's a case for Jimmy because he won the title, but no, RJ was the hero of this race. He started in the back row, got sixth, gave the speech and all of that. So,
yeah, and wore the shorts.
Dude loved the shorts. And he wore the jacket for the interview, all of it.
Oh, God.
So I specifically remember this, however old I was, 12, 13. He wears these shorts, and then there's ads starting to pop up of MXA, and I love these shorts. I wore shorts all the time, as you know, still to this day. And I needed these shorts so badly, but there was no shipping to Canada.
Oh.
And so couldn't get them. Found a place finally in Winnipeg, Canada, that imported these Life's a Beach shorts. Don't ask me how I found them, but they had only, random sizes and random stuff. But there they were one day, the bomb shorts sitting on the rack. And I believe, I want to say they were $80 Canadian, which for me back then, $80 may have been $800, right? But I got them. I bought them. I bought the Jetson ones. I bought the Bomb ones. I bought the Batman logo ones. I was all in on Life's a Beach stuff. All in.
Wow. You've just blown my mind. I had no idea that the shorts were even shorts you could buy.
Of course.
You bought three or four pairs of $80 shorts?
Yes. Yes. I had to have them. They were so cool. Especially you think about a kid in Canada going to school with these, right?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. I was in.
No one had ever seen them. Like, literally.
No.
They probably were like, where did you get those?
Yeah. There was Jetson ones. And I remember the store was so far from the house where we lived that, I had to beg my mom to drive me to this random sort of, surf shop, skate shop place. And I'm like, and then you'd go in and they would have none. And then you have to, there's no calling them or there's no internet. You just go back in 2 weeks. You just drive back in 2 weeks and hope they have more in stock and more your size. Yeah.
I cannot emphasize enough, and I know that there's probably not enough kids listening to this particular podcast, although they should because the stories are hilarious. But if you are younger than us and you were raised in a time where the internet existed your whole life, I just can't explain how hard to find the sport it was back then. Like, dude, I remember a Hot Wheels came out with a Suzuki Quad Hot Wheels toy. For 1987. And I saw it on TV, the commercial, at 7 p.m. one night. So I made sure that I had that channel on 7 p.m. every night, hoping that commercial would come on so I could see a picture of a Hot Wheels quad, because there were no other ways to see any other quad or dirt bike thing on TV whatsoever. None. there wasn't racing on TV. There wasn't YouTube. All you got was those magazines in the mail, and that was it. Yeah, and as far as actually, you did your podcast with Sivkovic, and he mentioned casual wear. Yeah, in the 80s, really how much motocross casual wear even existed? It was very little.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Right?
So, yeah, now it's just everybody I know is wearing an FMF shirt one day and a Pro Circuit shirt the next and a Yamaha shirt the next. But these things didn't even exist.
No.
Back then.
No. No. I was all in on Life's a Beach. Good God. Loved it.
Wow.
Soaked it in.
Wow.
Yep.
I had no idea this meant that much to you when you did this No Fear story.
Right. So then, yeah, I was just going to tell you. So the No Fear stuff, to me, talking to those guys, the Simu brothers, I was more into the Life's a Beach end of their business than the No Fear, right? Because I was just like, this was the coolest. These are the dudes who started it, that I had to have these. It all started from RJ wearing them over his pants.
Wow.
Yeah. So
Yeah, it really helped. I remember one day, you know, we go to the record store all the time because my sister was into Bon Jovi and all these hair bands, and they had the rack of posters, and you could go, you know, the posters, you like flip them like like doors, right?
Yeah.
And there'd be sports guys and musicians. And I was just like, can you imagine one day if there was like a dirt bike guy, a poster you could buy? And unbelievably, it happened. There was a goddamn No Fear Jeremy McGrath poster in 1994. And I'll be like, it finally happened. These No Fear guys did it. They got a poster in a store in the mall.
Yeah, they did. Yep. Good point. Okay.
Yep.
Liat Racy, who's that guy? Again, we each go ahead, but I got a little bit of info on this guy.
You mean the guy the least heard of?
Who's that guy award?
Jan Van Poppel?
Are you serious?
No, I don't know Jan Van Poppel.
Yeah, but okay, I do, for one. Everyone knows Jan Van Poppel.
Everyone does.
But Yasuo Tofuki. Tofuki, 15th place.
Well, yeah, I haven't heard of him, but I'm like, okay, it's a world event. They probably got a guy from Japan.
Yeah, but the idea is, who's that guy? You've never heard of him, and he's 15th. He's higher than Van Poppel, and everybody knows who Van Poppel is anyways.
Not everybody knows who Van Poppel is.
Van Poppel is a GP rider. Like, just, yeah, he's around. He was around in the 80s. He was in many magazines. So Van Poppel is old news. I cannot believe that you didn't say Tofuki. So...
He's just guy from Japan.
Okay, but if you go to Tofuki in the vault,
yeah,
he's in there.
Oh.
He raced and got last at the 76 LA Coliseum Supercross.
Oh, my God.
8 years later, Yasuo Tofuki makes his return to American shores.
He had the track wired.
With a 15th.
He'd already raced it.
With a 15th. Yeah.
He knew those peristyles.
Cannot believe you didn't say that.
I knew all the Euros in there. That was the only Euro name I didn't know. And then the other one, I'm like, yeah, just guy from Japan.
Okay.
Jim probably has stories about Asubis or whatever they call them.
Opies.
Opies. Opies.
I bet you.
He probably got him and Yasuo Tofuki Opie stories.
Probably. All right, that's Who's That Guy Award. I cannot. John Van Poppel is old news.
Okay.
All right, Lit Kit Award. I mean,
why even discuss? It's the shorts.
It's fucking RJ. That's who this Lit Kit Award is. Not so much for the cherry coke hat perched right on top of his head, but everything else about RJ. There's a photo of him on this bike with the shorts on, Red Fox stuff. It's in MXA. It's a famous photo. It's epic. It's epic. So, Shit Kid Award. Well, this one's maybe not so obvious, but I did find the cycle news for this race. There's a photo of Wardy Sinisalo. Stuff's never that good around this era. It gets good later. So he could be it. But there's a photo of Jobe in M. Robert, and it's black and white, but it's not good. Yeah, it's not.
Oh,
good, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this is a huge. There's a huge line in the sand between Euro gear at this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And American gear.
Yep.
Is Burnworth a Yamaha guy at this time? Is that what I'm thinking?
No.
Burnworth's not Suzuki. Burnworth is Yamaha?
Burnworth is Suzuki at this point.
Okay, hold on. I got to get it. There's a guy that runs Yamahas in this era, and he runs all black gear. Nobody wears black gear at this point.
Oh, well, no. Burnworth did that in 86. Hallman.
On a
all
Yamaha?
Black, on a Yamaha. Because he switches.
That's not who we're talking about here.
Well, Burnworth's on a no. He's on a Yamaha at this race. Okay, so he rode Suzuki's in '85. This must be his first race on a Yamaha.
And I think it's Hallman gear.
Yeah, it's Hallman. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. Nobody wore black gear back then, and it looks so bad.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. There's your. Keep going. Okay, so that's our shit kit. I also want to say this is the only one of the rare appearances of Gear Racewear in one of these races. Gear Racewear, pretty legend. It was around a long time. John Ayers, who's still, I think he's still running the tracks at the Nationals. That was his gear company. But I have to say, the Gear Racewear gear on Billy Frank actually looks pretty damn good.
It's like black, white, and red, right?
Yeah, or reddish orange or something on a Yamaha looks good. I wanted my chance to like be like, let's make fun of a gear company that's long gone, and the name of the company was Gear, but I couldn't really make fun of it. It looked good.
Horrible name. Horrible name.
Gear Gear. Yeah. Yes.
Gear Gear.
Yes.
It's like racing, also, racing Supercross in the Supercross.
The Supercross class?
Yeah, what class are you in? Supercross. Oh, you're at the Supercross? Yeah, I'm okay. In Supercross in Supercross.
Also, my favorite rider growing up was actually, speaking of quads, Gary Denton, the multi-time quad champ, and he always wore gear. So I thought gear was rad back then. I mean, if Gary Denton was wearing M. Robert, I would have thought it looked good.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Gary Denton could have worn a trash bag and you would have been down.
Oh, yeah, he'd made it look good. He was RJ of quads.
Right. Where's JT? 1985. when was he born?
79, 80.
Yeah, he's five.
Cindy scoring this one, you think? All the
nah,
way
this is an FIM event with Mike Goodwin. I don't think Cindy's got an in with these people. Yeah. They probably.
I just would love to see the I wish there was some footage of the FIM officials at this event.
Yeah, really, right?
Probably like 70-year-old guys wearing suits, smoking cigs.
Exactly. the Jacob Marsak Award for the rider who did the best that you'll never remember or never thought of. There's a few, actually, guys for this one. What do you got, Weech?
First of all, I want to say for both Who's That Guy and this, I'm shocked for a rando off-season 85 race how normal the results look. Do you agree with me on that? It's like most of the guys you've heard of, most of the guys finish where you expect them to finish.
And Dogger,
even the 125s.
And Dogger DNFs. Because he either got on the podium or he DNF'd. Right.
I mean, that is a Dogger race.
Yeah.
For sure. First of all, I want to say, the Euros aren't that bad. I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah, because this is a legit track, as we talked about. Yep.
Yeah, and they're not like, it's not ridiculous. Like, oh, there's just Joe Bay just leading some laps. Like, did the Americans get by him? Yeah, but it wasn't a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit surprised over that. But I guess I knew that Rodney Barr was fast, but I guess I didn't know he won a race. And as Davey says, he's the only national champ ever. So do I give it to him for winning the 125s? I knew he was fast, though.
There's some great stories about Bobby Barr that float around.
So the dad?
The dad did the modification. Well, you know, Barr modifications.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. That was a legend.
So Bobby Barr is quite a character, I guess.
Oh, I got to ask about that, because now that I live in North Carolina, those stories flow around quite a bit. I got to dig in on those.
Dig into them, but get ready.
Okay.
Prepare yourself for Bobby Barr stories. So, yeah, Rodney was good, though. Rodney was a good rider, yeah.
He was, but I guess, you know, beating Tyson Volin, Mike Healy, Eddie Warren, there was the three guys behind him. Those guys won races and titles. Good for Rodney Barr.
Okay, a couple things come to mind.
Okay.
For me, one is they make mention in the 125 text and Cycle News of Jason Upshaw having a spectacular crash coming down the Coliseum.
Oh, now, yes. I was going to get to that. Go ahead.
Oh, so I always thought that this crash was just from an AMA race. I never realized that, because that played approximately 800 times in all the highlights over the years, right? Because it was obscene what happened.
It is obscene, yes. When you watch this race on YouTube, it immediately goes to the next year, 86, and like the third clip, like 4 seconds into the show, get the damn Upshaw clip in it.
I never knew that it was the Rodeo Cup where that happened. So I learned something where I'm like,
I agree. Yeah. I also thought it was a regular AMA.
Yep. So, Rodeo Cup.
One of the greatest crashes of all time.
Was when Jason Upshaw saw God. So, there's that. Second of all, as Davey said, this was, you know, the best of the West and the best of the East. And did all the East guys make it? No. But the field is pretty stacked with good names, guys that go on to good careers. And then there's ninth.
Who is that?
Bart Shiflett. I don't know who Bart Shiflett is. I assume, like that Coombs guy, he got an invite and just showed up, like, because he wasn't in the top whatever 10 of what it was supposed to be. I feel like I'm pretty knowledgeable about all of this sport and everything that's going on, and I don't know who that is.
12th is Carol Richardson. Same thing. Don't know Carol Richardson.
Oh, Carol Richardson was a good amateur. Very good amateur.
Oh.
So I'm looking at Bart's results here. Bart's in the vault. Okay. He's from Missouri. Bart in 85, Bart went 15, 18, 17, 14, and that was it. That was all the results Bart ever got. So he rode 4 main events and showed up at this race.
Looking forward to our man Seth Rarick telling us about Van Poppel, about Bart Shiflett.
Yep, Yeah.
Carol Richardson. And most importantly, I'm sure he knows all about Yosau Tafuki.
Carol Richardson, you're going to get a bunch of Texas people getting really mad at you.
I don't know Richardson.
Yeah. He's legit. My winner for the Jacob Marsak Award, I did a podcast with this gentleman during COVID cross. He has a couple of sons that race. And 11th place, Russ Wageman. Russ. Beating Ricky Rhind, Joe Bay, Whiting, beating Van Poppel, beating Gabors. Good job, Russ Wageman. 11th.
And he is up there, you know, in the heat race.
Yeah.
Not just because of the cheating, but he had a good night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's my Jacob Marsak Award. What do you got?
Okay, that's fair.
What do you got?
Yeah.
You got Rodney Barr?
Yeah, Barr got a win over Eddie Warren and Tyson Voland and Healy, who were like super duper amateur and mini cycle guys back in the day.
Yeah, Eddie Warren won nationals. Healy won nationals. Mike Jones didn't. Eddie Warren did. Yeah, so you're right. Yep. Legit.
Yeah, Mike Jones in there as well.
Right. Mike never won anything, but good God, he got a lot of podiums in 125 Supercross over the years.
Yeah.
All right. Good times. Davey Coombs, Jim Hawley joining us for the Liat Re-Raceables. Thanks again to our sponsors. Thank you, people, for listening 2023. Send us some suggestions if you want. As you said, we're going to get Kit Palmer on. We're going to get Guy Cooper on. And then if you have any more ideas, go ahead and send them through to us. Yep. So,
Steve, do you think at the Super Motocross World Championship final this year in LA Coliseum that they'll have opening ceremonies and then Kenneth Feld will drive the track in an off-road buggy as the final part of opening ceremonies? You think that's going to happen?
No, but I think that would be awesome. But maybe
You would actually, if he did the Mike Goodwin.
Well, could Davey not do that at like Hangtown or wherever we're kicking it off this year? Could Davey not drive a buggy around?
Drive a buggy around the track as part of opening ceremonies. The promoter
would have been fantastic.
Freaking promoter,
right? Yeah,
promoter putting himself in opening ceremonies.
You actually talked to Mike Goodwin. That's a funny. You emails, right? Just emails.
I got on the email list.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For a moment, I thought this was going to be amazing. There's a couple Mike Goodwin guys that are still around that worked for him back in the day. So, you know, they're in touch with him.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, you know, he's been mentioned in stories and whatnot. And I'm like, hey, Mike Goodwin loves this story you wrote. He wants to reach out. I'm like, this is unbelievable. I'm going to get the Mike Goodwin story. So he did. I don't even know how it works because he's in jail, right? So it's like he can only leave you messages. You can't talk to him. But the message was, I think he just wanted me to get in the middle and the whole Thompson Goodwin thing, which I don't really want to touch on either side of it. And I'm like, oh, he just wants me to write a story about that. But it did put me permanently on the email list. So it's like once a week I get an update. Friends of Mike Goodwin.
Oh.
He was pretty sick for a while, but he's feeling better now. Still around.
Yeah, I know Davey wants to do it, but it's such a you're such a mess, right? Like, it's just, he doesn't know. Yeah.
Well, this is what I'm getting at. Like, I just want to know how these races work. Like, I don't need to or want to get into the Thompson Goodwin thing. That was for the legal system and the lawyers and the judges and the courts. But I would love to hear about making the first Supercross track ever and what was his relationship with Wardy, and you have Hannah stories and what was Larry Myers like or Larry Huffman. Like, of course I would love all that.
Yep.
So that's what I was hoping to get, but he just wants to talk about legal proceedings. And I'm like, that was for the courts 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a twisty, windy road for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't want to weigh in on that one, but wouldn't you love to hear? I mean, the guy's still alive. I'm like, this is such a great archive of old Supercross info that's not getting used.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic.
Yep.
All right. This was a fun one. Jimmy and Davey were really good. And this is a bizarre race. It's on YouTube. So please just watch it for all the action. It's great. So.
Watch it for the sandbagging and the Jason Upshaw crash. Good God.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thank you, Weech.
See ya.